Sand from the ground stuck to the sweat on my skin, even when I stood to lift the front hood. Again, I scanned. The radiator and the alternator and the transmission and the oxygen sensor. I could name all these parts, but I couldn't repair a single one of them. That had been my husband's job, back when I had a husband. And for a girl who'd traded in just about everything for that old van, you'd think I would have at least bothered to learn how to fix it. The nearest mechanic shop was 190 miles away. That's what the woman on the other end of the phone said when I called for a tow service. I had climbed on top of Bertha to get a better signal. The operator's voice cracked in and out as I paced on the roof rack next to the solar panel. She said she would contact me when she found a flatbed tow truck that was willing to make the near 400-mile round trip. She had no guarantee of when they would come, or if they would come at all. When I hung up, I felt strangely calm. I suppose when there had been two of us standing roadside with this broken van, there were sharp words and blame to throw around. He would say that I should have known the van wouldn't make it this far. I would say it would have been fine if he had fixed the right part. He would say it was my decision to live in this fucking thing anyway. And it was. It was my decision. And now it was just me left to reckon with it. Perhaps that sense of calm came from the realization that there was no longer anyone there to say, "I told you so." No longer anyone there to try to convince me to give up on Bertha, because for some ungodly, inexplicable reason, I just could not give up on Bertha. I climbed down, slid the door open, and watched the dogs burst out across the field in search of the jackrabbits that come out at dusk. They disappeared from view as I yanked the cork from a wine bottle with my teeth and took a good long swig. For as many times as I had watched the sun dip low in the desert, it still mesmerized me. First, the pale blue turns to pink, softening the edges of all the sharp, brambly desert things. Then the reddish-orange seems to rise up from below like fire, silhouetting the hills and the junipers and the sandstone cliffs. Then, just like that, it dims and fades, and the dogs wander back to the van, and the deep blue night drips down over us. Even as I stood there in the middle of the road, beside that giant orange mess of metal, it all seemed so peaceful. There had been no dramatic explosion, no horrible screeching car accident, no burst of fire consuming her hull. Bertha just rolled silently to a stop one day on a completely nondescript dirt road that sliced through a sagebrush field, and it was over. That part of my life was over. I believe the truth of how we become who we are is layered. Not like onions, but like earth. Traceable at the surface, but tumultuous beneath. Tectonic plates of our pasts shifting violently, or more often subtly, causing great rumbling disruptions in the identities we think we've mapped so well. I didn't grow up in the desert. I didn't grow up in any kind of world where risk was encouraged, where fear was celebrated. In fact, living in an old van with only the coyotes for neighbors was a positively rebellious departure from my middle-class Connecticut upbringing. A middle finger to the only way of life I'd ever witnessed. Grow up, go to school, get a job, get married, buy a house, have some kids, make a lot of money, buy a bunch of stuff, work constantly to afford all the stuff, and then hope you're still alive and able-bodied enough to go out and see the world. Where I came from, how much you had was always more important than who you were. Wealth was not measured in the stories you could tell, but in the price of your car and the size of your house. And it wasn't ever the concept of wanting all that stuff that turned my stomach. I understood wanting. It was the sickness of wanting all that stuff so badly and so often that I might forget to go find what I needed. It was the insatiability of it all, that no amount of anything was ever going to be enough, because I hadn't found what enough truly felt like. So I set out to prove what I didn't need. My quest for simplicity started with a summer spent living on an old, mildew-covered 30-foot sailboat before I fled west to Utah with the boyfriend who eventually became my husband. Then we made a home out in the desert in that big orange van, where the echo of our voices on the canyon walls were the closest sounds to civilization. We were a ragtag group of misfits.